Hi, this is Mike Schilling from Beerology in Northampton, Massachusetts, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode number 54.
Bricks are sort of gravity, the density of the solution reflects the sugar content. Higher the density, the thicker, the more dense the liquid is, the higher the sugar concentration. And usually that translates to more alcohol later in the final product. But you take a starting gravity, and with the starting gravity and the finishing gravity, you should be able to calculate how much alcohol is actually in the cider because of those two pieces of information. You learn from your mistakes, you learn from your experience.
Hello and welcome to episode 54 of Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincaller, and I am your Cider MC. On this weekly podcast, where we chat with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. It is a little wild in here this week. I'm on the flip side of Cider Days, a weekend that just took place the first weekend every year of November. And on that weekend, I recorded a chat with Mike Schilling at he and his wife Jordana Starr's new store. It is a homebrew shop, essentially, where they do all things fermentable, such as cider, wine, and beer. But I wanted to talk to him, of course, specifically on cider. And we talked about funky cider and yeast. There'll be more on that chat, of course, in the moment. And I want to give a little tip of the glass to our really geeky dude that I know, Charlie Olchowski, who's one of the founding members of Cider Days. And, I was standing outside at Cider Days. It takes place in New England, in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, out in Franklin County, which is a rural section of Massachusetts, about an hour and a half west of Boston. And it was a really nice, kind of more or less sunny day. I'm standing out there with my little table. The nose was standing next to me, and we're hoping that folks might consider donating to the chat. We had baseball caps on the table with the logo Cider Chat embroidered on front. They're really nice. You'll see some photos of me wearing them and other folks too on the Facebook page for Cider Chat. And part of that is my attempt to try to, in any way, generate some funds to pay off my trip that I took in Spain. Still trying to pay that off. And now it turns out I'm headed to CiderCon. And of course, you got to generate funds for that. You know, it all works out that way. So it was really nice that those of you who are listening who did take the time, and one guy just walked by and he just heard about Cider Chat and he handed me a $5 bill and he said, you know what? I know I'm just going to like this podcast. So I'm just going to give you this money right now because I know from the get-go it's going to be something I really want to listen to. That just blew me out of the water that a gentleman would do that. So tip of the glass to you and to all the folks who did pick up a hat just out of the love of cider and certainly supporting this podcast. And, you know, every single one of them, they were folks just like myself who enjoy cider, enjoy making it, enjoy learning about it, and are just in the glory of Ciderville. So thank you so much. While I was standing there, the next thing you know, Charlie Olchowski walks by and yells out to me, hey, we don't have anybody to do this next panel. The two guys haven't shown up yet. They're still over at Apex Orchard or something. Can you come in and help me talk about cider making and, you know, how to go through some of the concerns you have as a beginning cider maker? And I said, sure. So I ran, you know, with my jacket behind me and kind of look a little bit messy and jump up on the panel. And before you know it, Charlie and I were there chatting away. It was a really nice time. And perhaps you were in that audience too. I know I actually did make some new friends from there and hung out with them later. And we just had a delicious time talking about how to manage fermentation and temperature. Really all those things that this main chat today will be on with Mike Schilling. And he is from Beerology. And you might think, well, why is Rhea putting on something called Beerology? Well, you know, I guess I could say for Mike, I can't really speak totally for him, but I would say that probably his first love is beer. But this guy and his wife, Jorndade Starr, who also co-owns this homebrew shop, they have really caught in the cider fever, as you might put it one way or the other. And they're gracious enough, for one thing, to lend their shop, which has just opened in Northampton, for the location of this live recording. That means that we did have an audience, and it was on the first day of Cider Days. This is a long, epic weekend that just happened. I hope that you can make it if you've never made it to this event. It's 22nd years long. And we did this live recording. He and I just kind of geeking out on funky and wild cider. And all these difficulties that kind of come to your mind when you're trying to wrap your head around cider making, I remember that. I remember that beginner's mind. You know, shoot, I didn't know what an airlock was. I didn't know how much airspace I should have from my batch of sweet cider or apple juice. And you put it in this big, giant glass jar, which is about 5 gallons. I've even made 1 gallon batches. And you put on the top of that what's called an airlock. Now, I know this is going to sound rudimentary to some of you, but believe me, this chat isn't totally rudimentary. It'll cross all those different boundaries. And in the beginning, I didn't know that you should have that, like maybe an inch or 1 inch maximum between the top of your liquid and the little airspace before you put in your cork with the airlock. And what the airlock is, it's like this S tube that allows the gas to release and does not allow oxygen to come in. So as the cider is fermenting, it is creating CO2, and that's what you want to have go out, so that your bottle doesn't just kind of froth over and slither down the outside of the vessel, whatever vessel you're putting it in. I mean, they even do this with barrels. When they fill up a barrel with cider, they fill it up as high as they can, because you'll get sometimes a little bit of leakage, and certainly to start fermenting, you put an airlock on that too. You don't want to just cork it and let it sit. It will not implode, but kind of not necessarily explode either. It'll just kind of froth out like the thing kind of bubbling over. So that's what we were talking about, chatting about, and really discussing both at that course with Charlie and with Mike on this week's chat. And I think what I'm going to do is we're going to go right into that. Then I want to follow along on the flip side, talking about some of the new folks who have joined the Facebook page, because they are amazing people, and some more Ciderville news. So let's kind of hold your hats for that piece. And in the meantime, you could just be using this particular chat with Mike and myself and thinking about wild yeast, wild ciders. And that's where you get your fresh pressed juice. You don't want to get juice from the grocery store, because that has been pasteurized. And we know that pasteurization essentially, I hate to say it, but it kills off the microbes in there that would allow the juice, it stabilizes it essentially, so that they could sell it and has a good shelf life in the grocery store. But it does not lend itself for cider making. On the other hand, though, I know lots of people that do take that juice because that's all they have. So I'm not going to be a total cider snob, because I don't think that really helps anybody. And they do take that juice, and I'll include myself there. I've done it myself when, you know, I couldn't do anything else, knowing that maybe that pasteurized juice has different properties in it that I wouldn't typically want, but you know, it's doable. You take that juice, then you would have to add yeast. But what Mike and I are talking about in this chat is just fresh pressed apple juice from a cider mill. And you could get that when you come to Cider Days, because a lot of the cider mills are selling non-pasteurized juice. And I was up at Pine Hill. Josh poured out some juice for me. I had 2 5-gallon carboys, picked that up, and they're down in my basement right now. One, I'm just letting it go wild based off of this talk with Mike. I've done it before, but I have a different perspective on it. Just like Charlie says, you know, at the end of that fun little clip, we learn from our mistakes. It's just experience. So be bold, be cider bold. Don't be afraid to do this. If you have a question, you're kind of a little stuck, hey, you know, send me an email, Rhea@ciderchat.com, or just put it on the Cider Chat Facebook page, because I might not be able to get to it too quickly, but somebody there, I think, will help you out. In fact, I'm sure they will, because that's how it rolls in Ciderville. Now let's you and I grab a glass and join this chat with Mike Schilling and all the good folks in attendance at Beerology in Northampton, Massachusetts. I am really psyched to be able to have this opportunity to talk to you. I have, like I said, I have 10 gallons of cider in my vehicle right now. And I'm thinking, well, you know, let me come down here to your brand spanking new store and chit-chat with you a little bit about cider and some of your recommendations, specifically around, you know, funky cider, sure. Actually. And I want to kind of qualify that a little bit, kind of like a wild cider, but also yeast profiles that you could put into that, too, to give it that, like, funky, maybe a little bit of a sour taste, mm-hmm. and really bringing out the richness so that you're not going completely dry, mm-hmm. but you might mm-hmm. have a little bit of a dry style, too. Mm-hmm. So, and just for Ciderville to know, we're sitting in this beautiful brand new store on this table that's made out of barrel.
Yeah, old wine barrels.
Old wine barrels. It's absolutely stunning. And Mike has brought out two ciders that you made.
That's right.
And some glasses. So let's get started. What do
absolutely.
You think here?
So the first one we're going to do is a completely wild fermented cider. My friend his family owns an orchard up in Maine, and he picked these apples himself last harvest, and then he brought it, the juice to me, and I did a little wild fermentation on it. So I did not act. I did not sulfite. There is nothing that I added, and I did not add much priming sugar for bottle conditioning sake. I wanted it to be at least an homage to sort of the Spanish style. I don't know, little less.
Okay. Like a Cidra Natural.
Yeah, more in that vein.
Okay. All right.
So you can tell it's a little cloudy as well. And
cheers.
Yeah. Cheers.
Yeah.
And the big thing that comes across to me here is this is clearly not Cidra.
Yeah. Well, you're not pouring it from that meter.
Well, yeah, no, also true.
I was going to be impressed if you pulled that out.
So the thing that I think is really funny is the apples are very different. They're much juicier, fruitier, brighter. He's not using any drops or anything like that here. But, you know, a little bit of acetic acid development.
Mm-hmm,
has
mm-hmm,
a little,
mm-hmm.
little twang to mm-hmm. it. You can smell it, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're serving this pretty chilled here.
That I probably should have warmed it up a bit. You're right.
Well, sometimes I'm right. Not all the times. But what I like to say is I could be wrong, but I highly doubt it.
I like that. I might have to use that. So just while you got that in your glass, I'll go ahead and get this other one going.
Yeah, so that's very... I wouldn't call it like a dry finish. And it even has a little touch of that sweetness there, but not over the top. It's really finishing very smooth, no kind of like bite that you would get. And this is just wild fermented.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And a very small amount of priming sugar just creates some positive pressure.
So let's start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You get the juice,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you're getting your apple juice. It's at a certain temperature. Mm-hmm. What temperature are you initially looking at? Do you bring it up to temperature immediately? And what I mean, you know, heat it up,
mm-hmm.
or are you going for a slow fermentation?
Yeah, I pitch my yeast around room temperature, mm-hmm. or, I'm looking probably right around 68 degrees is what I like. somewhere in that zone. If I feel like making a cleaner cider, which doesn't really pertain to either of these, then maybe I would control the temperature a little bit more to keep it down instead of letting it free rise. But on these, I just kept it at ambient temperature.
For about how long would you typically go for that?
Sure. So, again, I would go much faster if I was doing a clean cider. This one...
Let's see. What do you mean by clean cider?
Sure. So, one that was... somehow I killed off or stalled the wild yeast that was in solution when they pressed the apples. So, if I was to say sulfite... And then wait 24 hours, then pitch a pure Saccharomyces strain. Then that's more what I'm thinking, like a clean cider.
Okay.
Now, given, you know, depending on your strain selection, that might be quite funky. I mean, you know, you could put a Saison strain or something, or, so, you know, certain farmhouse yeast strains in there. That's, it's, you know, we can dig into that too. But generally, I'm thinking, you know, English cider yeast, neutral ale strains, or even a fairly clean wine strain of yeast. That's what I'm saying, would be clean.
Okay, and sometimes I hear people adding like a pectin or something else in there. What have you found in that way? And certainly I have over the years, but now I'm like, oh, screw it. I just like go for it, you know?
I'm very much in your wheelhouse there. Like, other than like sulfite, if I wanted to do the clean cider, I don't act much.
Right. Let the cider make itself.
Yeah. Part of it is, like, we're so lucky to have the apples we do around here. Like, if I had really boring apples or the ones that didn't have as much tannin or acidity to them, maybe I'd work with it. But the apples are just so darn good.
Yes, they are. Yeah, if you have a nice blend.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, I have these two carboys out in my car right now. And they're blends that I got up at Pine Hill Orchard just moments before I drove right down here. And one is pretty dominant in Redfield, and it has some Mac and some Arkansas Black in it, which I was pretty excited to see, which is a very tannic apple.
Nice.
Really, you know, boy, that's, you know, some people just do a single variety Arkansas Black. So if I'm going to just let that go wild, I just bring it up to like 68 degrees and put my airlock on it and let it go.
Yep.
Let's just say that, you know, something else isn't going to kind of come in and start munching away and saying, hey, we're the dominant cider and, you know, we're going to get a little crazy rogue here. And
nothing is there to prevent that. That's absolutely a possibility. Wild cider is a little more risky. It takes longer to start fermenting, and it's hard to reproduce. Let's say you nail it one year. You could come back the next year, do all the same stuff, and not like the product. So I always do warn people, like, if you're going to go wild, you know, you probably can't make that again.
Right, of course. It's like a single vintage.
Right.
Yeah. Right, for that year. But, you know, when you're letting it go wild, you have that moment where... you're waiting for it to kind of come up. You're being a little patient. And then a lot of folks are saying, wow, that's just going to turn to vinegar.
Okay. And that will happen to some extent.
Your ciders here don't taste like vinegar at all. I think
they do. I think there's a little bit of acetic acid specifically. And that's part of the sour aroma.
I'm on the other
aroma.
End of a cold here. So.
Oh, yeah. So it's a very small amount, but especially if there is, you know, under the right conditions, Brettanomyces can create trace amounts of acetic acid. Also, you know, you may have had some acetobacter activity before fermentation kicked off because the CO2 wasn't there to remove the oxygen. So if there was oxygen present, you could have had early acetobacter activity.
Right.
So, I mean, that's absolutely possible.
Yeah, and absolutely.
For people who are concerned about that, you can be... if you're worried about acetobacter, there are things you can do. So let's say I'm worried about acetobacter in my wild fermentation. If you have access to CO2, so you can blanket the top of your fermenter with CO2 and basically purge as much of the oxygen out of your fermenter as possible and still keep it wild fermenting. That will hurt any acetobacter development before fermentation starts, which is a big part of this.
Right.
Not everybody has access to that.
That's if you have some good headspace, though, in there, right?
Also true, yeah.
True. So, I mean, typically when I'm telling somebody to make cider, I'm saying, you know, just leave that as like a minimum, like of an inch gap. Mm-hmm. But are you talking about at like that primary or that first fermentation?
Yeah, the very first, you know, before it's you start seeing signs of fermentation. Mm-hmm. And part of that, the CO2 is going to weigh more than oxygen. So if you, whatever is on top, if you can get the oxygen out, the CO2 will kind of stay there. Mm-hmm. It may get a little bit absorbed by the liquid. And obviously there is going to be some oxygen in the liquid. So, I mean, it's simply, you know, limiting Acetobacter activity as much as possible mm-hmm. until that active fermentation kicks mm-hmm, off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nice. So,
I got my other cider here.
Yeah.
Very similar, same identical base cider. Mm-hmm. I split it off, and so the part we tried was the wild fermentation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The other one I did, notice how much clearer that
yes,
is.
Yes, yes.
This one is wild fermented, so I didn't sulfite, but I did pitch some Brettanomyces. Lambicus, mm-hmm. Which we, I believe, have found out is, in fact, it's a type of Brett Brooks. That's its own discussion.
Well, you're using some, like, little jargon mm-hmm. here.
Okay.
Like, so why don't you say, like, the full name when you're saying Brett Brooks?
Okay. Brettanomyces brusselensis. The package when I pitched this was called Brettanomyces lambicus by the company that produced it. But it apparently is a subcategory. They've done some DNA analysis lately, and we're learning a lot of new things about different Saccharomyces and Brettanomyces strains. So we're going to see a lot of name changes, I predict, in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so the package said Brettanomyces lambicus, which is a wild yeast strain. I really like it. It's often associated with lambic production.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it funky. But dry, it will survive very well. And then I also pitched some Lactobacillus brevis.
At the same time?
At the same time, up front. So I did let the cider go wild a few days so that there was some, it was just maybe a little bit of fermentation activity, and then at that point is when I added the bread and the lacto.
Really? So you're not concerned about the wild yeast being like the dominant at that point?
No, because I'm pitching a pure culture of, you know, a lab culture pitch of...
Just straight of, you know, from, is this like a liquid yeast?
Yeah, I can show you some of the
we'll get some photos
later.
Of that.
Absolutely.
And we'll put that with those show notes.
Sure. So Brettanomyces is a yeast, of course, and so is Saccharomyces. That's what people usually talk about, like ale yeast or something.
Mm-hmm.
But Lactobacillus is a type of bacteria. Now, I earlier referred to Acetobacter, which is an acetic acid-producing type of bacteria. Mm-hmm. This is a lactic acid-producing bacteria called Lactobacillus, and it's about an order of magnitude smaller than a yeast cell. So some people are a little bit afraid of using bacteria such as Pediococcus or Lactobacillus because it can be very difficult to get out of your system. So
when you're talking about like a large fermenting or a brewery or mm-hmm. somebody who's making cider, we call fermenter. We don't call cider makers brewers.
But you know, it's something like if you're using any sort of rubber gaskets or some sort of plastic tubing or a plastic fermenter and there's some scratch somewhere. It's sometimes the bacteria can kind of hide in the scratch, and it can be hard to get them out.
Hmm.
And so it's hard to brew a clean beer again once that's been done on your system.
So then the rule of thumb there is put it in your, I don't know, back 40.
If you have what we call it your sour bucket, right? Sour on the side, or sour fermenter.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah,
that works.
And then use it again for next time you make a sour beer or cider.
And we know how sour is just so, like, the kind of like the honey spot right now for everybody's going for, like, the sour. Mm-hmm. And the palates mm-hmm. are really opening up at a level that whether you're in the craft beer community or you're, you know, in the cider scene. And I think cider really lends itself because you have... Mm-hmm. that profile already in an apple, you mm-hmm. could really bring it out even more and more and more.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I wanted to point out here, on the one where I pitched the pure culture of Brettanomyces and Lactobacillus, it's far clearer mm-hmm. than the wild fermented one,
yes.
which is kind of interesting.
Yep.
They're both equally dry. In the specific gravity scale, they both came out drier than water. So if water is 1.000, this came 0.996. They both finished at the same final gravity. They're both 6.8% alcohol, I believe.
The starting gravity was...
Gosh. I want to say it was...
That's pretty, 6.9.
1048? 1050?
That's you know, mm-hmm. I was just over in Europe mm-hmm. and talked mm-hmm. to some of the French yep. cider makers, mm-hmm. and they're doing wild fermentation, too, and their ciders are at 4.9%, you know, 5%. Mm-hmm. And
are they doing any keeping that you're aware of?
Oh, yeah, okay. Definitely. Yeah,
I think that may have something to do with it.
Not all of them are doing keeping, though. I mean, mm-hmm. many of them are doing that's mm-hmm. one cider that they make. Mm-hmm. And actually, this year at CiderCon, there's going to be a French maker there just mm-hmm. specifically on keeving. Mm-hmm. But I've also spoken to UK cider makers mm-hmm. who do keeving, too. And
wonderful.
That's where it leaves the residual sugar. But mm-hmm. right. little off topic there.
Yep.
But,
So I wanted to point out on these that on the one where I pitched lactobacillus, you have significant lactic acid. Whereas in the wild fermented one, what the acidity there is mainly acetic acid. So you'll notice on the wild fermented one, it smells more sour because of the acetic acid. Mm-hmm. Whereas on mine, the lactic acid will not have so much smell, and there isn't really acetic acid in that one, so it doesn't smell like it's going to be sour, but it is more sour on the palate. Mm-hmm.
And when Mike's talking about it being cloudy, it's very, very light. I mean, you could see through the glass, but we're not talking about like a scrumpy type of cider here, or cloudy cider by any means. Mm-hmm. It's really minimal. What is the age here? Like you did the cider in the fall, mm-hmm. and when did you find this like bottle ready? And one more question in between there. How many racks do you normally do in between? Because that certainly helps mm-hmm. the precipitance drop down, and you're getting a really clear cider.
So this one, I did not rack this whatsoever. This was aged on lees.
No kidding. Okay. Well, that makes it easy.
It does. One of the things people are racking because they're concerned about yeast autolysis, which is basically when the yeast cell dies and splits open and its guts go out into solution. Kind of can taste like soy sauce. Mm-hmm. Those compounds which come out of the yeast can be utilized by Brettanomyces and turned into not so bad flavors and often good flavors. So if you have wild cultures present, it's not necessarily a bad idea to age on lees anyway. Mm-hmm. I chose not to rack it at all.
So let it go.
Yep.
Let it go. I've always said that making cider is the most easiest and affordable libation in the world to make.
Yeah.
And that's just a proven point right there. And certainly the ease of not having to clean out another carboy and do that racking over, which is siphoning from one vessel to another. It keeps it really simple. And, you know, a lot of folks leave their cider on the lees. And what we're talking about there, another word for it that I call it, it's a schmutz.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's on the bottom of the carboy. And you could see it if you're doing this in a carboy. Yeah. Have you done any barrel aging of cider?
Not barrel-aged cider, no.
Yeah, yeah. I know, those barrels. I got this old Schilling beer cast from my grandfather, and one side is kind of busted out, so I'm like, God, you have to take it all apart and put it back together. I really want to get that, because it's a 5-gallon cask.
Oh, nice.
How exciting would that be?
That sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Come on in. We're just chit-chatting on the podcast here. You can be part of it.
Would you like some cider?
Yes, please. So I want to talk a little bit more about even directing it further.
Okay.
And what type of yeast that maybe you have in the shop that folks can do to really get that Brettanomyces, you know, really right on your edge of your palate, that super funk.
Sure. This is a really fun area for me. I carry lots of different strains of Brettanomyces, as well as even a blend of different types of Brettanomyces. So, for example, I carry the Giga Yeast Brett Brux blend. So it's a whole, you know, I mentioned that they were finding a lot more about Brussellensis now. Well, it's a whole bunch of different things within that family of Brett. So that's fantastic. That'll get you a good spectrum of what Brett can do. It's got some little more funky, earthy, dare I say, horse blanket, farm kind of, yeah, you know, barn kind of flavors.
Hay.
Yeah, hay, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I love all those.
So things. I think Brux is a really good direction to look for that. I do have Brettanomyces. I've got Clausenii. So a whole bunch of different strains that are kind of fun to play with. And then the other thing, I've even got some blends that are aiming for a particular aroma set. So, for example, I've got like a a blend of lactobacillus and Brettanomyces, which is to throw off like a cherry kind of aromas. Or one that's more like plum character. So there, sometimes they're specifically aiming for a fruit character of some sort. Other ones, I've got some really fun blends that are often geared toward the saison maker or the farmhouse ale maker, but are fantastic in a cider. So I've got a saison blend that's both Brettanomyces and a saison ale strain. Now another, there's so many things you can do, and cider takes well to just about all these yeasts.
Yes, they do.
Every time I experiment with a new one, I'm almost always pleased. And like, it seems like all the yeast can work really well. And
yeah.
Even I had somebody made a lager cider with a lager strain, and it was very nice.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to really play with these things. In my experience, most ciders with most pitched cultures of yeast are going to finish very dry. Like, there's unless you're keeving, unless you act in either heat pasteurized or chemically pasteurized somehow, it's just going to finish dry. So some people will back sweeten or try to pasteurize or do some of those other things to leave some sweetness. And that's, I think, I generally don't recommend the home cider maker try heat pasteurizing just because you'll blow up a lot of bottles.
Right. And what you're talking about there is where the cider has been placed into the bottle and then is placed into a hot solution of water.
Yes.
And you're essentially doing your own pasteurization system in home, and it can be dangerous, so you have to be careful. Not that it can't be done, and
indeed,
there's a lot of good YouTube things for people to learn how to do that. So that's one way to stop pasteurization. The other way to keep that residual sweetness is through the keeving that you talked about, and that's actually where you all the nutrients rise up to the top, and you have a little brown cap, and you puncture through that cap, and you suck out that juice, and then you make the cider. So it's a very low nutrient, so nothing for the yeast to really be feeding on. And then people back sweeten.
Sure.
Which, it sounds like you did a little bit of this in, is that true?
A little bit
of sugar in one of these? No.
Just bottle priming.
Bottle priming.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So it wasn't back sweetening, it would have been consumed because it was still alive.
Right. Okay, good.
The other thing, if you wanted to chemically sort of pasteurize, you'd use sorbate. And in conjunction with, maybe sodium metabisulfite is often a good way to cease a fermentation.
Right.
In conjunction with your potassium sorbate.
Right. And I think a lot of cideries actually do that. Now, what about a double pitch of a yeast? Because I know that one cider maker in particular, Cider Creek out in New York, and I haven't really been able to follow it up with him, but I think he did. He pitched a Brett, and then he went back and did a Saison. And if you're going to do something like that, at what stage would you do that? You wouldn't do it all at once. And is there enough, does it make it worthwhile to pitch another yeast when the initial fermentation has gone through? And how much are you going to get there?
This is complicated. So,
well, that's what I thought. I like complicated.
There are reasons.
In a cider way.
So without knowing exactly what this product is or how it was done, the immediate reason that I can think of, if you're going to bottle condition, you may not want Brett to do the bottle conditioning because it can produce this compound called THP, tetrahydropyridine. And it tastes like Cheerios or like breakfast cereal, but like that kind of, I don't know, to me it's dead on Cheerios. And so if Brett does that bottle conditioning, it can produce that. Normally that would go out of an airlock in your fermenter.
Right.
It's a normal part of Brett, but it's trapped inside the bottle and it eventually cleans itself up over maybe 6 months, and Brett is very slow. So for that reason, you could get if you pitched your saison strain with the bottling time to do the bottle conditioning, then it would not produce THP. It would more quickly carbonate the bottle, and then you're quicker to market.
So you do it right at the time that you're bottling it. You pitch that strain in, or you just, literally, do you just pitch it in, swish it around, and then bottle that sucker?
Pretty much. Yeah, add it with your priming sugar.
Fun.
Yep.
Wow, that's a whole different level.
So now for that, you may only need about 10 or 15% pitch rate of like a starting cider. So if I was going to do, say one vial per 5 gallons, I really only need maybe 10% of
What if you use a whole vial? Because like you're mm-hmm. like me and you're like, I don't want to pour that out. What am I going to do with it? I want to pour all that in there.
You don't need to do that. It's hard to over pitch at the homebrew level though. So you'd probably be okay doing that.
Yeah.
I can't really think of too much of a downside. And especially in the context where there is live Brett, even if you had some autolysis late in the game, Brett might be able to clean that up later. I don't know. But the other reason you might do that, I think maybe what you were suggesting originally was, if you had an early Brett fermentation on a cider that was either clean or wild, but you had some pitched Brett, and then later come along with your Saison strain, if you were going to do that and you wanted the Saison to actually do some fermenting and assert itself, make its esters that you might expect from a Saison strain, then you might give Brett a little bit of a head start just because it's so slow. You may let it build up, you know, let it multiply a bunch of times, get a good culture going, maybe even start seeing signs of fermentation, then pop in the Saison. Because Saisons can be quick and aggressive.
Right, right.
So functionally, even then, the Saison strain might actually do most of the fermenting.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit about the profile of the Saison, because I've made many ciders with Saison. Because, well, I've been to Belgium many times, and I write about beer, and I like that kind of fruity style of beer. So I thought, what the heck, let me start using Saison. So I started using Saison probably about 5, 6, 7 years ago. And, you know, it doesn't dominate. I mean, the apple always kind of dominates, and it takes the yeast on whatever route it wants to take it based upon the blend. And it doesn't give you that same kind of, like, really fruity profile. I don't know if you found the same thing. But it does have that kind of Belgian-esque, you know, overtures, for sure, because you're really pitching in something very dominant.
One of the things I've found with cider and Saison strains is I think the Saison asserts itself more, A, at a higher temperature, and that's going to be true of any yeast. So if you're just keeping it, you know, in that 68 or 70 zone, it may not be as expressive, especially if you're using the DuPont strain, as opposed to, say, the Thierrier strain.
Yeah.
Some of them need to be a little higher to get the classic flavor you're expecting. So that's one part of it. The other thing is that a cider fermentation is going to go super dry, and then there's pretty much nothing for the yeast to do, like, or eat at that point, that it's dry. Whereas in a beer, you know, if you got you can control what types of sugars are left at the end of fermentation, and then the Saison might be able to chew away at it for a little while and keep, you know,
keep it going
a little longer. So that might be the other thing.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the French Saison strain, which is the Thierrier strain, I like it because it's more of like a pepper character that I think goes quite well with a lot of, you know, maybe not quite as fruity strains, but if you're willing to use drop apples, or if you're using more European style apples, it's fantastic for that profile. Whereas your DuPont strain, I tend to get a little bit more juicy fruit or like bubblegummy character, and that can actually work quite well with more of your fruity American type apples.
Right. Yeah, the culinary apples versus the cider apples. So I think I asked you this. I'm not sure if you answered it, but the start to finish with a wild fermentation, what have you found?
Time-wise, I noticed it started showing signs of fermentation. Like the airlock started bubbling around a week or so after I got the juice. I think I got the juice maybe a day or two after he had picked the apples.
Okay.
And I think he used a hydraulic press. And so then it came to me a day or two later, and then maybe 5 to 7 days after that, I started noticing airlock bubbling. Then I sat on that until, probably 9 months, I want to say.
Okay.
Something like 9 months. And then I bottled it, added a little bit of priming sugar for bottle conditioning, and then here we are today, say 2 months later,
Right. And at that temperature of 68 degrees.
Yes.
Yeah. Dark room.
Yep.
In a cellar? Are you doing it in a cellar, Mike?
No, I live on the third floor of a mill building, so just.
Well, that gives everybody hope. I love that.
Yeah, no, I
think of all the people who are listening right now and thinking, I live in an apartment,
right?
You know,
and I do.
I'm in like Boston or whatever, and you know, can't think about that. I don't have like a stone. Yeah. Foundation,
but you might have a closet, and you know, in the summer my air conditioner is next to the closet. I keep the closet door open next to the air conditioner, and the other thing I do for people, I know we're talking about the funky end of things, but I'll counterpose that with how I'd do a clean cider.
Yeah.
I would be much more concerned with temperature if I was doing a cleaner cider. The first 3 to 5 days of active fermentation, I would want to control the temperature and keep it down in the 60s, the actual liquid temperature down in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So because fermentation is an exothermic reaction, it's going to generate heat. So even if your room is 68 degrees, inside that fermenter could be 4 degrees hotter, for all we know. Now you're sitting there at 72, 73 degrees during the height of fermentation. Now you think you're at 68, but in reality you're a little too hot.
You think it's too high, yeah.
Maybe, and this is strain dependent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it depends. You know, but if you want that super clean taste, I often, even though I live in an apartment, you know, I don't have a chest freezer that's temperature controlled for this. What I would do, I'd take a big tub. I can show you some of those too. But it's, you know, you keep your sweaters in there over the summer or something.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, sure.
You put it in the back, but so it's a watertight tub. I fill it with water, put my fermenter in there. And then in that water tub, I can be adding, like, refreezable ice blocks.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's a good tip for the apartment dwellers out there wanting to make cider.
Yeah, and really, you only need to worry about that for the first 3 or 5 days of active fermentation. So it's not even that big a deal. You check it before work, you come back to work, you check it, you add another ice block. But, you know, not a big deal.
Very good. See, I'm always putting my cider right next to my wood stove.
Okay.
And it's like music in the house, and you hear it, and you can smell the release all the time. And so I'm thinking, you know, that wood stove, normally this time of year, would be cooking. We're talking right now in November. And so that would... I'm doing a very high fermentation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think it's just kind of like the rural New England way that I learned it. But I think that this brings on a different dimension. And it's very, very exciting. And what about adding some sugar on the upfront? What if you do a wild ferment... And a lot of times, I like to like throw in a little bit of honey in
mm-hmm.
there. I've used like sweet mead yeast quite a bit when
yeah,
I'm making
sure.
my sizer. Now I'm going to call it a sizer,
yep.
Which kind of takes it out of a different category of the clean cider because I have that honey addition. Might throw in a banana or some blueberries.
Mm.
What if I did that though with just a wild yeast? What would you expect there?
I think, yeah, if you
a
have
longer fermentation?
Yeah, a little longer. And depending on exactly what type of honey you're using, you know, the apples are going to have super simple sugars. So depending on your honey, you could be introducing a little more complex sugars.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's definitely going to mean a longer fermentation.
Yeah.
Especially if you're using, like, a really, you know, crusty, heavy-duty, you know, like, complex sugar type honey.
So temperature is really critical, and you know, as I talk to cider makers all over the map, you know, that's that really critical place right at that initial onset of the pitching, or even before you pitch and bring it to that temperature. But I think as a basic rule of thumb for folks, that 68 degrees is a good one to do, and to maybe have a little thermometer, as you said, in the bucket or...
You can get strips for the side of your fermenter.
Right,
just be aware of this effect. Like the outside of the fermenter probably won't be as hot as the middle of the inside of the fermenter.
If you need to put on a sweater, you know that it's gotten too warm or too cold.
Okay, I think that's...
Too cold. Put on a sweater, it's too cold. If you're taking off your sweater, it's too hot. Be your own barometer.
I like that.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's awesome, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
And I'm sure that they're... This is going to really cook up some folks, and I'm going to be trying it on this time. I'm going to do another wild ferment. I haven't done it in a while, and I think I'm going to pick up a little bit of some of your yeast here today.
Wonderful.
And we'll take it from there and follow up and see what it's like in 9 months or a year out.
Well, I'd certainly love to try it.
Yes, and you will indeed.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Sure thing.
I would like to thank Mike Schilling and Jordana Starr, both from Beerology, for hosting this week's chat. And Mike, I'm looking forward to drinking that cider. It's already fermenting away in my cellar. Too much fun, all that kind of wild yeast. Oh, I like funky sour. I like what it brings it you know, two at a different dimension. So I got a couple different things going on. What I'm going to do is post on the show notes for this episode, which is a number 54, and I'm going to show you the two blends that I have. One was 53% with Redfield apples. And remember that this is coming from a region where there is quite a bit of Redfield due to Terry and Judith Maloney, who brought over that wood scion from Geneva way back when. And thus, I'm going to check it out. And I'm letting that batch, it has some Arkansas Black, albeit only 3% Arkansas Black, has a little bit of McIntosh and a little bit more. So I'm going to post that on the show notes. And with that batch, it's going to go wild, a funky cider. The other batch, what I did was I got some yeast, and it's from White Labs. People who like to know it by the numbers, it's 775, and it's an English cider yeast. I do enjoy that style. I'm going to just pitch it and let that ferment out without any sugar addition. Then later this week, it looks like I'm making a little bit more cider if I could get myself out into the orchard. That time is of essence, isn't it? To grab some apples off of a tree known as a lady. And that's a really kind of a very small apple. It's rather dry, kind of not quite like a quince, which is super dry. Often it's used as ornamentals. I'm going to bring that over from Carol Hillman's farm. That's New Salem Preserves. She used to sell those apples to a large grocery chain, and they would just sell it as like an ornamental put on your Thanksgiving table. But instead of putting the apple on the table, I'm going to pick cider and put that cider on the table. It'll be for next year. I'm going to press up that lady, see how that goes, and probably blend it into like a Mac blend and whatever else I could kind of get from here or there. So lots of fun on this chat. Again, thanks to Mike. I really appreciate your time and hospitality. This Saturday's weekend was pretty amazing, and I can't leave without saying a special thank you to so many people who stepped forward and tapped myself on the shoulder and said, you know, I came here because I heard about Cider Days on Cider Chat. And there was these like two young men from, there was these two guys from Pennsylvania. That's Bradley and Christopher. Both Tristan and Stephanie came up from New York City. It just went on and on. It blew me out of the water and really spoke to me, the connection that we have in Ciderville. You inspire me to keep going forward. So thanks to each and every one of you. I know that you're just making cider like I am, you know, in your apartment, or if you got a basement, you're having it down there. And we're just meeting around a glass and sharing it. I also had set up a, like the first ever kind of cider meetup that was just open to anyone who wanted to stop by on Friday. After being at Beerology, I zoomed up to the root cellar, and wouldn't you know, there was a number of folks who showed up, such as Garth Shanifelt from Arts Bev. They do some sizers, which I'm pretty fond of, which is cider, where you also add honey and ferment it. And that's absolutely delicious. And they do a nice job there. They do some barrel aging. They're using all locally sourced honey. Field Maloney from West County showed up. And Mike Barnes from Wheelview Farm, which is, I think that's Coleraine too, or like Shelburne actually. Just a beautiful, spectacular farm. I hope you got to see that over Cider Days. It wasn't too far from like all the events. And let's see, we had Brian Rutzen from the Northmen. There'll be an upcoming chat with Brian. We're going to like give you the lowdown of what's happening in Chicago for that new cider bar. And then there'll also be some really great trip tips on how to get from the O'Hara Airport. I hope I'm pronouncing that right now, because now I feel a little wiggy on my Chicago pronunciation. You know, how to take the public transportation in. And if you're going to CiderCon, we really got into like the neighborhood and where to go and what to see. So that's going to happen. That'll probably come out in January so we could get our CiderCon energy going forth. And even if you're not going to CiderCon, which is stands for Cider Conference, and that's a trade fest, essentially, or a trade conference, I should say, truthfully, if you're going to Chicago anytime, and a lot of people are going in and out there all the time as a major airport hub, now you get the lowdown on a really cool scene. And I just adore Brian. So that was fun. And I got to hang out with him that Friday night. Dave White from Whitewood Cider. Dave White from Whitewood Cider showed up, and he had an old college buddy by the name of Lars. And the four of us, wouldn't you know, after the seminar that evening on Friday night that was on Cider Cocktails with Darlene Hayes, well, I want to show them a little bit of my backyard, because I do like bringing people on tours. That's one of my most favorite things to do, is show people and share with them the tips. I think that's why I do Cider Chat on the kind of little particular items there. And we went up to the Poet Seat, which is this really amazing tower. It's a park area that overlooks Greenfield. And, you know, we were up there at night, and it was really, really beautiful. So that was fun. Then the next day was at the community center, where I got to meet many, many folks, some old friends, some new friends, definitely Ciderville friends. Then it went on to the Cider Salon. Oh, man. And then the next day, Sunday, ended with all these talks, an amazing talk with Eleanor Leger. Now I know how to pronounce her last name. I'm hoping to go up to see her and Dave and Albert, her husband partner at Eden Specialty Ciders. They are so brilliantly known for their ice cider there. That's up in Newport, Vermont. And I'm hoping to see them. Oh, I just could go on and on. It was John Bunker and Cammie Watts. Fun, fun, fun. So that happened there. And I am kind of recovering and just, boy, just looking for the next time to like have a cider, which will be as soon as this show goes live, don't you know? If not sooner. All right. Well, I want to also now welcome some of the folks from Facebook. As I said, they're really, really cool people. So let me just go through that right now, as I do have your attention. And I do have a special thing at the end of this show that you should stay tuned to. But the first one I want to say is welcome to Trista, who I actually met at Cider Days, and one of the folks who heard about this on Cider Chat, that event. She's from New York City. And then there's Marlene from the Netherlands. And we have Fabio, and he is based in like the Hudson Valley. It sounds like he has an orchard and a cidery. So if I find out more about that, I'll share the name of that. And we have Octave Lettier. And this man, does that last name sound familiar? If you are a regular listener, you'll notice that that's the same name as Agathe Lettier. That's his mom. And Octave is, he's doing this cool thing, which is he's using cider in a brewing system. He's going to talk about that. That's going to be at the end as I'm going out. I'm going to leave that little piece there. You can listen to what he's doing, this three-barrel brewery system in Pendipi in France. And I really enjoyed this man. And, of course, his mother is this amazing, amazing cider maker. So you can listen to that piece and find out more about that. Thank you so much, buddy, for joining the Facebook page. And you should know, it's non-exclusive. If you want to join in, just go to Cider Chat on Facebook and join today, just like the page. And you can follow me on Twitter at Cider Chat. I'd like to give a big thank you to the following three cider makers who step forward and support the Cider Chat Cider Going Up campaign. Make sure when you're out and about to ask for their cider. One, because it's really, really tasty and worth your time. And because by supporting them, they in turn can support this chat. That's Big Apple Hard Cider in New York City, Current Cider in Perkasie, Pennsylvania, and Oliver's Cider and Perry in Hertfordshire in the UK. This past weekend, I was also honored to see 3 patrons of Cider Chat. Now, when I say patrons, these are listeners who are not making cider necessarily commercially. They just enjoy cider and enjoy Cider Chat and being part of Ciderville. And one of them stepped forward and definitely made me blush when he said,
"Listen to Cider Chat because Rhea's got a voice that's smoother than malolactic fermentation."
Malolactic fermentation indeed. Whew. Wow. Well, that's a first for me. And that's what Ciderville's about, right? Well, look, if you like this man and so many other good folks who have stepped forward and said, you know, I listen to your podcast every single week and I get a lot of value out of it. If you'd like to help keep this chat thriving, please go on to the Cider Chat Patreon page. There's a link in the show notes to this episode, number 53. And if you're a small business, kind of struggling, trying to just make ends meet, and you can't do everything, and you know, at the same time, you need to promote yourself, I'm going to recommend the folks at wearepr.co. They do social media for small businesses, perhaps just like yours. You could find a link to them on the show notes. Or you could Google them at we, and then it's the letters rpr.co. Well, I'm ready to roll out of here. Make sure to wait till the very end where you could hear a bit about this brewery in Pendepie, France, that's using cider to brew beer. That's going to be pretty interesting, and that's with Octave Lettier, and his mom was on this podcast speaking about her cidery in the same town. A lot's going on there around the world and in Ciderville. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. What is your full name?
Octave. Octave Letellier.
Okay. And so, what is your brewery name?
My brewery name is Funky Llama.
But you have to spell that for me.
Funky Llama, F-U-N-K-Y, Llama, L-A-M-A. Funky Llama.
Is there a website for that?
We are launching the website very soon. It's going to be funkylama.com. Dot beer, sorry.
Dot beer. Dot beer. That's a great dot. B-E-E-R or D?
B-E-E-R.
Okay. And how did you learn to make beer?
I learned mostly by reading. A lot of reading. Mostly how to brew, howtobrew.com, and the book, very, very good book.
Remember the name of it?
Then the name of the author, or the name of the book is How to Brew.
Oh, How to Brew, okay. All right, yeah. And so you said you were making beer with apple juice. And are you getting the apple juice from here?
Yes,
wow.
It's organic apple juice from traditional orchards. I merged them into the kettle in order to bring a bit of acidity and the taste of apple. That is good mix with ginger.
With ginger,
Mix it with ginger and obviously barley, mostly wheat.
So a 3-barrel system is what I would call a nano brewery, like a small brewery.
It's a very small brewery.
Is that in this town here?
Yes. It's the same domain.
And can you say the name of the town?
Pendepie.
Pendepie.
Yeah.
And is there a tasting room, or do you just sell the bottles there, or you bring a jug?
We don't have a tasting room. Mm-hmm. We are at the very beginning, and we are starting the commercialization,
merchandising,
this month.
We
are actually going to receive tomorrow like three pallets, three
wow.
a lot of ingredients in order to make our five next days with a lot of brews.
Wow, okay, cool. Yeah. And so when you produce that, are you going to be bottling it in small bottles?
Or? Small bottles, like,
so like a 12,
yeah,
12
long
ounce.
Neck.
Yeah, five, yeah. Mm-hmm. And does a person have to come and to your brewery to buy it, or will it get distributed out into Onslow?
We are going to go to the bar, go to see a distributors.
Right.
Caves,
wow.
Specialized in cider, but touristic caves around here in Normandy. In Paris too.
When you say cave, that's a bar.
Cavacidre, how you say?
Club?
Caviste?
A club.
No?
Okay,
Caviste? I don't know how to say it in English.
So, where's the
retailer of bottles specialized in wine, in cider?
Right, okay.
You know?
Oh.
A liquor store.
Yeah,
a liquor store.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Okay. All right, yes. Oh, wow. That's awesome. Because you know what I always see? Because I've been riding in my region on beer for quite a while, mm-hmm. and I've met a lot of beer, you know, beer masters like you who start out with a nano. In fact, I know one guy right now, and already he's thinking, I have to expand.
Mm-hmm.
I have to expand and go to the next level.
Next
and now
level.
He's now opening a 10-barrel system.
Okay.
So he went from 3-barrel and going to 10-barrel because the demand came. That's just a bigger system. That
okay.
Now we're actually calling the nano is a small, like a 3-barrel, because
mm-hmm.
you have to work the same amount of time to make that 3-barrel as you would 10 times the amount. So it's the fact that it's going to expand is... would not surprise me if I talked to you a year from now. You'll be like, yes, Rhea, already. I'm thinking we don't have enough, we're not making enough beer, the demand is there, and we have to expand.
Yeah, we're going to move on with a bigger system in January.
Yeehaw!